Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins.
Hot damn, wasn't that good news?
In a different era, Charlotte's celebration over winning the 2012 Democratic National Convention might have been reprised as Republicans appeared ready to award Charlotte with their party's 2020 convention. But the mood yesterday didn't seem as celebratory as the Charlotte City Council voted to press on with the RNC bid.
I witnessed this debate tear the fabric of our city apart. It's pitted friend against friend.
Democratic Councilman Matt Newton was on the losing side of the narrow 6-5 vote endorsing the convention bid. It capped a nearly four-hour meeting that included feedback from roughly 100 people who were almost evenly split between wanting the convention for its economic impact.
Please do not neglect the city, the small businesses, and those needing paychecks of this amazing opportunity.
I vote Democrat every year, but I don't care about that. I just care about the business that the RNC is going to bring to Charlotte.
And those opposed to the convention on moral grounds over the actions of the Trump administration.
It's about whether or not we will push back on racism, discrimination, hatred, lies.
What comes with this is intolerance and violence from that intolerance.
We cannot risk people's lives for a dollar.
In the end, the economic argument and the appeal of being bipartisan in polarizing times won out, the Democratic Councilman Larkin Eggleston providing the swing vote.
We must lead by example and make tough decisions, which will often be unpopular. We are not elected to constantly protect the odds of our own reelection, but to do what's best for all of Charlotte, even if those decisions come at a personal cost.
What are those political ramifications of Monday's vote? Can both sides mend fences in the event Charlotte is awarded the convention? Here to talk about that are Democratic Mayor Pro Tem Julie Iselt and Republican Councilman Ed Driggs, both of whom supported the RNC bid. Welcome back to the program, both of you.
Morning.
Thanks, Mike.
Good morning. And Democratic Councilman Justin Harlow, who voted against further pursuit of the convention, is also with us this morning.
Glad to be here.
And we're also joined by WFAE's David Borax, who covered yesterday's meeting, a long meeting. Thank you for being here.
Hello, Mike.
Tomorrow we'll spend the hour with Mayor Vi Lyles, who has been the leading voice for Charlotte's convention bid, and we'll encourage you, if you'd like to join that conversation, to send us some questions in advance for the mayor at charlottetalks@wfae.org. So the vote in favor of bringing the Republican National Convention to Charlotte in 2020 was a squeaker, 6-5. Aside from Justin Harlow here, David, who voted no?
It was other Democrats, Dimple Ashmira. Help me out here, guys. It's very early.
Matt Newton.
And Braxton Winston.
And Luana.
And Luana Mayfield, was one of the first people to actually raise questions about this back in March when the mayor first brought this up. Actually, everybody else said, well, let's see what we can get. Let's go for it.
So there were supposed to have been a lot of supporters and detractors coming to protest outside the government center yesterday. That was what we were predicting. What happened?
I would say there was about 24 people out there. They described it more as a press conference. I think that's probably accurate. They had a podium and speakers talking about why they didn't think it should come here. A lot of the conversation there focused on Donald Trump and his statements and policies that people feel are harmful to people of color, immigrants, women, that sort of thing. They didn't think that it would be appropriate to invite the president to come here, given what kinds of things he's saying.
And inside, the meeting has been described by various news sources as being contentious. How would you describe it?
You know, I don't think it was contentious. I think it was a civil meeting. There were people definitely on both sides. By my gauge, it was about even the number of people who were speaking for and against it. There was maybe a couple of speakers who raised their voices and tried to go beyond their time limit, but I think beyond that, it was really relatively civil. People stated their opinions, and the next person came up. Part of it was the format. It was one-minute statements, and for those familiar with city council meetings, usually you get 3 minutes to speak, and there's a buzzer at the end, and in this one, it was 1 minute, and because of the number of speakers, there were 132 people signed up initially. Mayor Vi Lyles and Julie at one point were moving them through, and one speaker right after the other. So, but I would not say it was contentious.
Is that the first time, Julie, that we've heard from citizens about their opinions on whether or not we should host this convention?
Oh, no. We or us? No, we've been getting emails since Braxton had...
I mean in a public setting.
Oh, yes. Yes. It was the that was a special meeting that we felt we needed to have to let people voice their opinions.
Well, I want to ask about how those opinions affected you and other members of council, but let's hear a couple of these opinions. Here is the pastor of Charlotte Statesville Avenue Presbyterian Church and just a portion of what she told council yesterday.
I want you to think back to the night that Keith Lamont Scott was killed. I was out there. We are at political unrest in this country. We are at unrest in this city. It is not over.
And a Charlotte businessman surprisingly said that the lack of competition should have given the city pause in terms of competition for the convention. Other cities not really vying for this. Here's Dan Roselli.
When everyone else in the free market has determined that there's not a good opportunity here, they're almost always right. RNC 2020 is that opportunity where literally no other city in America wants the opportunity. Not a single one, even the Republican-controlled city councils. That is the free market screaming red flashing alarm bells at the Charlotte City Council today.
But the executive director of the Charlotte Area Hotel Association, Vince Shalina, pointed out that it should be hotel workers and not politicians who will bear the brunt of any boycotts, and we should not have another one by boycotting this convention.
In the past, we've been victims of lost wages due in part to partisan politics. The ACC football championship, the NCAA basketball tournament, NBA All-Star game. When our hotels are full, we work 40 to 50 hours a week. When our hotels are empty, we work 20. Please stop putting us out of work. We need to provide for our families.
So was it split 50-50, do you think, these comments for and against? Were there more for, more against? How did it break?
Actually, it was kind of funny. At one point, Tarek Bokhari, our number cruncher in the group, said that he was keeping a tally at his desk, and he had it as 54-46 in favor of having the convention
having
here.
The convention.
So Braxton Winston was keeping score next to me as well, and reluctantly he had to record that the people supporting it outnumbered the people opposing it.
So I have to ask, and maybe this is an unanswerable question because you can only speak for yourselves, but what role, if any, did public comment play in making your decision, either the comments that you heard yesterday afternoon or the ones that you've been getting through emails and other methods?
I think it's safe to say it made a big difference because there were 10 of us who had indicated assent in a meeting, and then when the public's noise cranked up in the last couple of weeks, people started to realize this is a very political issue, and we had a number of defectors. So I can only attribute that. I had had about 5 emails up until June 20th, I counted. Mm-hmm. And this had been public for months. And I think there was a storm about it. I'm still not convinced about the depth of feeling on that in the community, because you look at what happened last night, unexpectedly, more supporters than opponents. The crowd outside didn't materialize. So I think the position of the people of Charlotte should be represented fairly.
So, Justin, you're one of those defectors, I guess.
Sure.
What have you been hearing from your constituents?
So no question that, I think it's our job to listen to constituents. I listen to a lot of folks. Ed's right. We gave a 10-to-1 kind of, soft poll to the mayor to say, hey, let's look at this, let's pursue this. I'm not running from that one at all. I was one of those 10. I think after having a lot of discussions with the police chief, I talked to a lot of people in the business community, folks in the hospitality industry, whether that be hotel owners and business owners, and then also a lot of my constituents in District 2 who are hospitality workers. And then the barrage of emails that we got certainly makes a difference. I think that's being a responsible elected official, listening to both sides.
Is that why you changed your mind? Because early on, you told The Observer that when the mayor called you early on to say, do you think we should go after this? You said, okay, that sounds like a decent opportunity. Is this why you changed your mind?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple things there. So I changed my mind after really thinking about saying, hey, what is this really bringing to this city? A quick phone call with the mayor a few months ago doesn't allow that opportunity to really digest all of the implications from that. But then also, there's this idea that what is represented currently by this leader of this party. And I tried to reflect that in my comments last night, that this is about Donald Trump, what he reflects, not about a generalization of all Republicans and what would bring out in the vileness that he brings out.
You said last night, I'd no sooner bring Donald Trump and the RNC to Charlotte, to the home that I chose and love, where my wife and I are raising our black son, any sooner than I would support a Klan rally in this city.
That's exactly right. And then I also said, Donald Trump is not a Klansman. That was the follow-up, but some of his supporters are. What we know from Charlottesville and other rallies and what Donald Trump brings out in people, he shares this rhetoric that empowers the worst of us. And to me, that is not something we should be embracing. That's not something that I want him to be shouting at our taxpayer-funded microphones, at our taxpayer-funded convention center or Spectrum Arena.
But, Mike, this isn't a political event about Donald Trump. And my main objection to all of this was—
The convention isn't?
It's not
a
rally.
It will be 100%
about
Donald Trump.
It's not a campaign event for him.
Yes, it is. Absolutely, it's a campaign event for
him. It is one of the institutions of our democracy that we have conventions. And we need to respect those institutions and preserve them and not allow the feelings about a leader to dissuade us.
Let's just clear that up right now. Because if you're telling me that the 2012 Democratic National Convention, which nominated Barack Obama to his second term, was not a campaign convent, you're living in Disney World.
And if you tell me that the Republicans at that time didn't welcome it graciously because of the fact that they respect our political traditions, then you're living in a dream world.
But we've also got to acknowledge that 2012 is a very different, not just political climate, but just social climate than 2018. And we can argue about who created more racial divides or political divides and whatnot. That's an argument that'll go on for days. But I truly think that the rules of engagement have just changed. Donald Trump being so unconventional, we know that everyone knows that portion of it. This would not be a convention as usual. It's not just about security. This is also about, you know, people's true existence. Donald Trump has threatened that. He's bragged about sexual assault of women. He's pulling children away from their families at the border. He's been consistently speaking out against, he's been very xenophobic, very homophobic. These are values that we don't hold here in Charlotte. We value all the people in this community. We can't give a platform for hate and then also say we're going to be inclusive.
Justin, where was that sentiment 6 months ago? Why did it just now emerge?
1 month ago. Where was it 1 month ago?
1 month ago. This started 2 weeks ago.
One month ago. Stirred up by a video that was released by one of our colleagues 1 month ago, and up until then, everything had been quiet. We had 10 members of council who wanted to go here. I had 10 or 15 emails. The community was generally accepting, and suddenly it became a referendum about the president and not one of our political institutions.
Well,
I don't think the depth of that feeling extends that far in the city.
Julie.
Being in the middle on a lot of these things, I want to say something that, first of all, yes, back in March, 10 of us gave the green light to the mayor. This isn't Amazon where you put together a little wooden box and send it in. This is, hey, we're on a short list to be considered for the convention. Should I pursue this? And 10 of us said, yeah. We had a lot of us had experiences with the Democratic convention. It was great. We gave her the green light. And then all of a sudden we find out we're pretty much, you know, it. We don't know that. We haven't been told that. But that's what, you know, everybody else is telling us.
Everybody's saying that. Why do we think that?
Well, I don't know, but I guess nobody wants to go out there and say, come on over, Donald Trump. We'd like to have you here. So that's hard. Then all of a sudden we found that out.
What does that tell you?
Well, let me just say, okay. And to the defense of my colleagues who changed their mind, I get that. I completely get that. LaJuana was always a no. And she said last night, as a black gay woman, I don't blame her at all. Justin, and Matt with their constituents, I get that. I really do. I'm an at-large representative.
We have to take a break. We'll come back with more of this conversation with Julie Isles, who's the mayor pro tem and Democrat at-large on council, in just a moment at Charlotte Talks. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about yesterday's city council decision, 6-5, to invite or to approve the – we'll talk about exactly what the vote was about in a minute – but to approve the contracts for the Republican National Convention in 2020. We have not been chosen yet, but it looks like we are the front runner, one of two. If that is even true, we're not even sure about that. Julie Eisel is here. She's the mayor pro tem on council, Democrat at large. Justin Harlow, who voted no yesterday. Democrat from District 2, Ed Driggs, who voted yes yesterday. Republican from District 7, and David Borax from WFAE News. I interrupted you in the middle of something you were talking about, your justification yesterday.
Oh, well, you know, what I said was, I mean, for me, it was kind of straightforward. We gave the mayor the green light to pursue this. We find out we're, you know, have a pretty good shot at it. And frankly, to pull the plug yesterday when they're announcing Friday would have made the mayor fail. And if the mayor fails, the city fails.
You said, you told WFAE's Marshall Terry on Morning Edition, I think it was yesterday, that changing our minds about welcoming the convention could bring irreparable damage.
Yeah, I believe that.
City.
I know, and Justin's saying no, but I lived through the nightmare of some of the things. Yeah. And I've seen what they do to this city.
And the reality, our
General Assembly.
Okay.
And that's a reality. I accept that. I accept that they're in control. I accept that our federal government is all Republican. I accept that. And I mean that in a way to say we have to build relationships. We talk about affordable housing. We talk about transit. We talk about infrastructure, all the things that people can need to live well in Charlotte, to rise out of poverty, to have opportunity. We cannot do that alone. We can't do that without the state or federal government.
You disagree, Justin?
I totally disagree. So, I agree with this, with the fact that, yes, we have a General Assembly and we're in a kind of Dillon Rule state where, yes, they could remove all of us from office today if they really wanted to. I think, though, that, you know, when we talk about this irreparable harm and we talk about this like it's so, you know, just like they have all power and we have no point of even having a local government at all. If we don't push back against that, what's the point of us being here at all? What's the point of having elections in these odd numbered years to elect us?
Well, Ed, you're a Republican and you also agree with Julie's assessment that it would do irreparable damage.
For different reasons. Okay. I don't think it's right for us to make decisions out of fear of reprisal. I didn't hear any threats from anybody in the General Assembly. This was kind of an assumption about their reaction. The main thing is it's bad faith. It is absolutely bad faith. You go this far down the road in negotiations with somebody and they come to depend on you. They invest a huge amount of time and money in the dialogue that we had to get to the point where we were. And suddenly, under circumstances that haven't changed, you walk away. That sends a message to any business partner
But couldn't it be argued that circumstances did change? All this resistance developed. I'm not sure why, and did it surprise you that it developed, particularly this late in the game?
The resistance was a lot of noise generated by a relatively small number of people. At the end of the day, Larkin told me he had 300 emails out of a city of 835,000 people.
Okay.
I had maybe 100. That resistance was stirred up by an activist on council at the last minute.
Who would that be?
That would be Braxton,
okay,
who put a video out and questioned, and that was what set in motion this last round. Up until a month
Why
ago,
he
we
activist?
Had not heard that.
Why is he an activist?
He was an activist. He was very visible during...
Well, yeah, but he's also a council member, so what does it make him an activist?
And he also has a responsibility. We all have a responsibility to listen to our constituents. You know, and I'll go back to the point you made earlier about why did we change our minds, or so many of us. I think some of us who voted no yesterday changed our minds for almost the same reasons. It's this idea that, yes, we heard a lot more from not just our constituents, but from the community. And some of us believe, that this council needs to have more public engagement about everything that our city government is doing. And so creating some of that engagement is very important. So I credit Braxton for doing that. Yes, does that muddy the waters a little bit? But I think we have a responsibility to make sure that our community's voices are heard.
David. Council received 80,000 emails over the ordinance and during the HB2 thing. We got several hundred this time. I think the gauge of public sentiment, of widely held public sentiment, is not the noise that was made by a couple of hundred people in the chamber or through emails.
That's Ed Driggs, David Borax.
Just a 30,000-foot observation about what happened. I mean, think about this. This is a major convention. Charlotte is in the convention business. It's one of our lines of business as a
absolutely.
City. And so when somebody dangles something like that in front of us, our default setting is to say, let's take a look at it. Let's go after it. Sure. And I think that's what happened earlier this year when the mayor first started talking about it. I remember when she told a bunch of us reporters in her office that we were going to be doing this, and everybody would kind of smiled and said that would be cool. But I don't think everybody was thinking about the possibility that we would actually get it. And so you asked before, what changed? One of the things that changed is other cities started dropping out. And their city council said, no, we're not really interested in this. I think there were, by one report that I read, there were 7 cities interested in this, and we're down to 2. And Las Vegas, even in that case, the city is not participating in right. that bid. It's being led by the tourism folks. So, you know, as it began to seem more likely, I think people started thinking about, okay, what would it be like to have the Republicans and Donald Trump come here? And that leads into all of the things that Justin was saying that people are thinking about, and what would it mean to have him here?
Well, that was definitely my concern, David. I think one of the differences for Charlotte, a lot of the cities don't want to do it because they're worried about security. And we did it in 2012, and it went really, really well. I called representatives in Cleveland to find out how it went for them. They ended up having resources for one security personnel, be it police or FBI or whatever, for every 4 visitors there. And they felt good about that. My condition for this bid, it was always the security grant.
Charlotte was the safest place on earth during the Democratic National Convention when they were here, because not only of CMPD, but also all the other officers who came from regional police departments. There were 4 police or 5 police or 6 police offices on every single street corner in downtown Charlotte. And
a lot of people didn't come to work that week.
And police had been trained about what to do should a protest develop. Now, Tariq Bakari, who was on this program last week, said he had spoken with CMPD Chief Kirk Putney, who told him he was confident that he could handle anything that came our way, and if that Chief Kirk Putney was confident, Tariq was confident that it could happen. But this has earmarks of being something more than what happened in 2012 mm-hmm. or what happened in Cleveland. This has, some people are saying, and I don't know whether this is true or not, that this could be the 1968 Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Is Charlotte prepared for that? And even if the center city where the convention is being held is prepared for that, could those disturbances erupt in areas where there is not the heavy police concentration? And does that concern you?
The federal government provides a grant of $50 million in order to fund extra security during the convention. The size of the police force effectively triples. The chief has an excellent plan, which he says spelled out in some detail, as to how the crowds will be kind of managed, separated from each other. There will be a large police presence of lightly clad officers, and there will be backup of kind of more heavier intervention. I think the planning that needs to take place has occurred, but I also refer you to yesterday. Yesterday was a preview.
Okay.
And yesterday we had a very civil conversation.
But I'm not talking about Charlottesians. This is a worldwide event. This brings the spotlight to Charlotte from the world, and people will be coming here from around the country, if not around the world.
We certainly talked about the fact that there could be more unrest or that unrest was likely. Our feeling was that, for one, Charlotte was a perfect place for the convention for a number of reasons related to the kind of state we're in here and our desire to build our convention business and to increase our profile. But then we looked specifically at the risk issues, talked at length to the chief, and the feeling was that that could be managed, that that was a risk that could be managed to a level where it was worth taking given the benefits to the city, which are not just dollars. I mean, it does have to do with a huge media presence, the spotlight on the city, and the stature that the city gains.
And the security comes from the federal government, too. And, you know, they figured it out with the inauguration. These are the same people that are working on a security plan over the next 2 years. I do want to make one point, though, Mike. I didn't give the green light for this because I'm afraid of resistance to the federal or state government. That's a pragmatic opinion in my mind because I've seen it. I gave it because I think it's the right thing to do. The mayor went through with this bid, and we let her do it. And if she fails, we fail. And as a city, we won't be taken seriously. We have to be very upfront about the security risks. I'm not going to hide behind that. I'm not going to hide behind how I feel about this president, who I think is a morally bankrupt individual. But we are a democracy. We are a two-party country system. I think in the end, democracy has to win. And we've got to do what we have to do in this city to protect democracy, to protect protesters who want to protest peacefully and give them space to do that. And that's what this is going to be about for the next 2 years.
I want to come back to that, but Justin,
I think we're creating some false equivalencies here. So we keep talking about, well, 2012, we did all this, and we learned a lot of lessons. I wasn't here in 2012. I've learned a lot about what the city has gone through. I talked with folks that were on council at the time. I've spoken with the police chief, and I have confidence in Kurt Putney. I think there's more to that, though. You know, we know what happened in September 2016 with the Keith Scott shooting and the protests and unrest that came out of that. The community is still healing from that. When we bring a celebration of a man who has really just challenged every level of kind of, in my opinion, sanity and really disrespect to the office of the presidency, and bring that here to a community that's still fragile, to a community that's still trying to heal itself, we are opening ourselves up to so much more. No amount of economic impact is worth that at this time. This is not about saying we never want Republicans to come to this city, Republicans aren't welcome here. Certainly they are. And this is not about a generalization that all of them agree with the president or not, but it's about this president, what he brings currently, and this RNC endorsing them.
Last week when Braxton Winston was on this program, he said that President Trump does not reflect the stated goals and aspirations of the city of Charlotte. And we have laid those aspirations and those goals out on the table. We've talked about them on this program. Do you agree with that statement, either or any of you? And do you think, if you do agree with it, are we being hypocritical about those goals and aspirations if we're inviting the RNC?
This is not a test of our goals and aspirations. This is a test of our willingness to show courage in a difficult climate and uphold our democratic institutions. That was the mayor's motivation, and I think she's absolutely right. I think Charlotte should be proud of the fact that we were willing to proceed, even under these circumstances, notwithstanding. You don't get to choose when you adhere to democratic principles. You don't get to stop doing so when you don't like the president. And this is a two-party system that we have that needs to be protected.
What about that, Justin? Because there's been criticism raised by people on the left about the left wanting to shut down free speech when it doesn't agree with what they believe. The right does this too, but now the left is doing it. What about that?
So both parties are kind of going through this identity crisis right now, and we've got what I would consider hyper-partisans on both ends. I just think that, again, it's this president and his rhetoric that is bringing out true resistance and saying, we got to stop normalizing this bad rhetoric, stop normalizing this bad behavior. Ed's a great guy. He's a really smart individual, might be the smartest one on the council, in fact, but he keeps talking about this idea that we can't challenge things just because it's the president of the United States, or can't challenge these principles, these two-party system principles, because that's the way it's always been. We've never had a Donald Trump, though, so we can't use that same premise for that argument. This is Donald Trump. He's nothing like it. We've seen nothing like him. And so we have to stop treating this like this is business as usual.
Given that this usually you have cities around the country clamoring to host political conventions because of the incredible amounts of money that they bring in and the attention that they bring to the city that hosts them, and the goodwill that comes as a result if the city does a good job of hosting those conventions. This time around, there were no cities vying for this, really, when you come right down to it. Not even the city of Las Vegas, which is in contention with us, has extended the invitation. It's a private group in Las Vegas that has extended the invitation. Given that, does that put us in the catbird seat? Can we get more from this than we might have gotten in normal times in terms of economic development money or money for this convention or control or whatever you might be looking for at the city council level that would give us more than we would have gotten before?
We did get more.
What did we get?
Well, Council Member Eiselt pointed out some issues about the way these conventions are normally contracted and the arrangements that are normally made. And we got better protections in our agreements than other cities have.
Protections meaning what?
Financial protections, okay. Contingencies, things like that in the contracts, which as originally proposed would have left the possibility of Charlotte being liable under certain circumstances for costs related to security. And basically, Councilmember Eiselt said, I can't accept that. And they were negotiated away.
Because of the way President Obama insisted that funds be raised for the 2012 convention, the host committee here, I think, was left holding the bag, and some industries stepped up. I think Duke Energy and maybe others stepped up to fill the coffers to complete that deficit. That will not happen this time?
No. I mean, we're not. The way the contract, the RFP was written, it would say the host committee and or the city is on the hook if the federal government doesn't come up with the security grant. And I said, that I'm out. That's pretty, you know, and or is pretty significant if you're in the city.
Right.
So the host committee is on the hook for all of this. But there are things that we do get from this that the DNC didn't do a very good job of talking about. The host committee spent millions of dollars on equipment and office supplies. Safe Alliance, our battered women's shelter, their whole administrative office is full of equipment from the DNC. Nobody talks about that. We got. I've talked to the host committee here because Cleveland had a surplus of a few million dollars that they put back into the community. And so we have to do a better job of saying to the host committee, what are you going to do with your equipment and with your surplus?
Some people are concerned about the military equipment that comes into the police departments here and around the country that host these events, and that they are increasing the militarization of police. We got a lot of equipment during the DNC. Is that going to be augmented by the RNC if we get it? And what does that mean?
I would imagine so. Again, this community's healing. We know what we went through in 2016, that type of presence on the streets, what that can create, the type of feelings that can conjure up in our community. And so when we're bringing this national security event that also happens to just be a celebratory parade for this president and you know, putting all of those types of public safety officers on our streets, bringing all of that equipment here, it's going to conjure up some of those same emotions and feelings. Again, in 2012, this was before Baltimore. This was before, you know, Eric Garner. This was before all the conversations around Black Lives Matter and all the activism that's going into the militarization of police and police brutality of Black and brown people. We're going to bring that, couple that with this current president's rhetoric. I mean, that has the possibility. There's so many intangibles there and so many unknowns. Even when you get into the contract, so much. We just reviewed this contract on Friday. So part of why I changed my mind is this is just a rushed process. We're reviewing the contract Friday. It's still in draft form. They're going to Austin tomorrow to be awarded this thing. I mean, this is very quick.
Okay. Jennifer on Facebook. Here's some comments as we've been talking. Jennifer on Facebook, I don't think Democrats should be accepting what Republicans are doing to our city, state, and country. Mike emails, I'm disappointed by the vote to invite the RNC to Charlotte. It seems like an intentional move to blemish our image. Value zero, economics one. Kurt emails, we are told the contract covers all costs not covered by the federal grant. Will this include damage caused by any protest? That's a good question. Yes or no?
Insurance.
Okay. And Scott on Facebook says, thank you for accepting the RNC. Although I am not a Republican, the true hallmark of a world-class city is to foster the democratic process and create a new tone of civility and deliberation rather than chaos. If we can pull this off, despite any protests that may develop, what does that say? Very quickly.
It says that we're a world-class city.
Julie Eiselt, Democrat, Mayor Pro Tem, Justin Harlow, Democrat from District 2, Ed Driggs, Republican from District 7, and David Borax from WFAE News. The mayor will be on the show tomorrow to talk about this very issue. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.